Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline for the cover story, Active Adult Haven. More than 2,500 new baby boomer targeted units are on tap in Northwest Raleigh, Eastern Durham, boosting the area's role in the retiree market. And that's the headline that starts on the front page. The article is actually inside the Triangle Business Journal with another headline, An Oasis in the Making. As the Triangle becomes a mecca for active adults, home builders seize the opportunity to give them what they want. And this article was written by Amanda Jones Hoyle. When Anthony and Kathy Gracia's grown children moved out and settled on opposite coasts of the U.S., the couple said they knew they had to make a choice about where they would want to spend their retirement years. Neither was too fond of shoveling snow in the cold winters of New York's Hudson Valley region that they'd called home the previous 36 years. Both of their children lived in California for a while, but when their daughter moved to Raleigh 2 years ago, the decision was sealed. We'd been coming down here the last 20 years to visit friends, and we knew we liked everything about North Carolina, Kathy Gracia says from their new home in the Carolina Arbors Active Adult Community in eastern Durham County. We didn't want to live in California. The Gracias are among a new wave of baby boomers who are looking for housing solutions that allow them to age in place while maintaining an active lifestyle. They also are part of what will be one of the biggest demographic shifts to occur in the Triangle in years. A review of the site plans approved in Durham County shows that over the next decade, more than 2,600 new homes targeting adults ages 55 and older will be built within a 5-mile radius of Briar Creek at the Wake County and Durham County line, an estimated increase of 72% from the current availability across the Triangle. According to the census numbers, the 45 and up age group is expected to grow 6% a year over the next 5 years, while every other age group is expected to grow only 1%, says Jay Colvin, regional director at Metro Study and a housing market analyst for the Triangle region. That's what's driving a lot of builder decisions right now. Wanted nearby amenities. The old adage of location, location, location still rings true. Much of the Briar Creek area in western Wake County was built out during the early and mid-2000s, followed by a recent rush for more apartment units around the now-established retail shopping centers and office parks. But much of the land across the nearby Durham County line has remained undeveloped. That's partly because of concern by some land developers that lingering issues and low test scores at some Durham County schools in that area would discourage young families with school-aged children from buying homes in those neighborhoods. With an age-restricted or age-targeted housing community for active adults, that concern is wiped away. It's a really great location except for the schools, Colvin says. It helps also that there's already full-service healthcare facilities nearby. Wake Med Health and Hospitals opened its Briar Creek Healthplex in 2012 with a 24-hour emergency department near the entrance to Del Webb's Carolina Arbors Active Adult Community. Duke Medicine also has a primary and urgent care facility nearby. Prime market for home builders. Just as the baby boomers have redefined every other stage of life from college to careers, they're now remaking retirement as well. The youngest of the 76 million baby boomers turn 50 this year, and an average 10,000 boomers per day are projected to turn 65 from now through 2030. Plus, with home values returning to pre-recession levels, more active adults and retirees are looking to sell their houses and move. They are feeling more secure with their own financial security than they did a few years ago. Home builders have been trying to figure out where those potential customers want to live and what they want to do after age 55. At the 460-acre Carolina Arbors community, the largest of the four active adult housing developments in eastern Durham County, construction is well underway with 240 homes sold in the past 12 months. Carolina Arbors is also an age-restricted community, meaning that at least one person living in the household must be 55 years or older. The Del Webb community is projected to have 1,250 homes at build-out, plus an extensive list of activities and amenities to appeal to interests of the baby boomer age bracket. It'll have a community garden, a dog park, tennis courts, pickleball, and bocce courts, plus a 34,000-square-foot community center with indoor and outdoor pools, activity rooms, and fitness center. The Gracias say they've already gotten involved with the community's exercise classes, men's club, community outreach programs, and social clubs. Our clubhouse isn't even built yet, and we still had 100 people come out to a veterans event the other day, Kathy Gracias says. It's sort of a lot like living on a cruise ship. You can do as much or as little as you like. Home prices at Carolina Arbors start at around $205,000. Nationally, the average price of a Del Webb home in 2013 was $302,000, with buyer-selected options and upgrades representing about 20% of that price. About 40% of Del Webb's buyers pay cash for their home. Age-restricted versus age-targeted. Statistics also show that about half of the homes already sold at Carolina Arbors went to buyers already living local to the Triangle region. Bill Kiselik, Carolina's division president of Arizona-based AV Homes, says that's part of the reason his company decided last year to expand into North Carolina, a state that usually ranks right behind Florida and Arizona on the top retirement destination lists. North Carolina already has the mountain retirees and the beach retirees, but the new phenomenon is retiring near where you've lived most of your life, he says. You can stay near your network of friends, and in Durham, they can stay near their children and grandchildren living in Cary, Apex, and other areas nearby. AV Homes will soon start work on its first model homes at its Creekside at Bethpage community at the intersection of Page Road and Chin Page Road. Pre-sales are expected to begin in early 2015. All of AV's houses at Bethpage, a community about 4 miles south of Carolina Arbors, will also be age-restricted. But not all builders, even active adult builders, are comfortable with all the age-restricted constraints. The two other big active adult communities expected to break ground this year, Sierra and Four Seasons at Renaissance in eastern Durham County, will instead be marketed as age-targeted communities. The designation means that there is no restriction on minimum age limits for buyers, but the housing product and amenities are clearly targeting the active adult crowd. You're going to see a lot of ranch-style houses or two-story homes with first-floor master bedrooms, Colvin says, and maintenance-free. These buyers don't want to mow a yard or blow pine needles out of the gutters. Colvin says another reason most builders avoid age restrictions is because the millennial generation is also showing a desire for the same lock-and-leave housing options. If you're age-restricted, you could be killing a lot of your buyer pool, he says. You may be getting 100% of your sales from those 55 and older, but a builder wants to keep that market as open as possible. On tap for the Triangle. Larry Lippincott, president of the Raleigh-based Forever Home Builder Group, says his company expects to begin construction on the first of 529 home lots in its new Sierra community that's north of Carolina Arbors by this fall. About half of those new homes will be in a neighborhood that will be age-targeted. Half of what we've been building around the Triangle and in Wilmington is age-targeted anyway, he says. When you get to be a certain age, a 3,500-square-foot or 4,000-square-foot home is just too much. That's a lot of mowing and cleaning inside and out. Construction at the Four Seasons at Renaissance Community near Bethpage could also be restarted later this summer, says Craig Briner, president of Raleigh-based Greenhawk Corporation, the investor group that bought the remaining 455 home lots at Four Seasons in 2013. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the column written by managing editor Rebecca Troyer, Biz, A Quick Glance at Triangle Happenings. And first, the main article, Rutherford is ready for Penguin Country. Fresh from his whirlwind visit to Pittsburgh, Biz caught up with former Canes general manager Jim Rutherford, who looks like a very happy man. This all happened so fast, Rutherford says about being named the new general manager for the Pittsburgh Penguins. I was thinking that I would like to get back with some team, but not at least for a year, he says. Rutherford says he will keep his newly built house in Wakefield, and his wife Leslie and his son will be living in Raleigh full time for the next year. At least that's what the plan is for now, Rutherford says. Raleigh has been my home for so long, and I know I will continue to have a relationship with this beautiful city. When asked about the former Pittsburgh coach, Dan Bylsma, being a potential candidate for the Hurricanes coaching job, Rutherford said he knows nothing about it other than to say, Dan is a fantastic coach. Best wishes, Paula. Welcome home, Jim. Paula Freiland, the PNC Bank's regional president, who was named the bank's head of the Triangle and Eastern Carolinas operation in 2012, is leaving the area to become PNC's regional president of the Philadelphia, Southern New Jersey region. She succeeds Bill Mills, regional president since 2001, who will retire after a 43-year career in financial services. Freiland took over the newly created position after PNC acquired RBC Bank USA in March of 2012, and has a more than 20-year history with the Pittsburgh-based bank. Succeeding Freiland in Raleigh will be Jim Hansen, who currently is in Birmingham, Alabama, as regional president of Northern Alabama. Hansen grew up in Winston-Salem and is a graduate of both NC State University and UNC Chapel Hill's Kenan Flagler School of Business. Before moving to Birmingham in 2010, Hansen held leadership roles with PNC's predecessors in Raleigh since 2001. Hansen led RBC's commercial markets with his regional vice president title. Golf tourney raises funds for vets. Biz caught up with the folks at Enable America and commercial printing company EDM, who have teamed together in the past, to host a golf tournament to assist men and women of the U.S. military. One of the tournament organizers, Aaron Singh, tells us that this year, the tournament is expected to raise some $40,000, most of which will be distributed to four military veterans. This year, Singh tells Biz, some of the proceeds will also go to the Make-A-Wish Foundation of North Carolina. The golf tournament urges local businesses to lend a hand in assisting the group raise the money. This year, the tourney is on June 30 at the Prestonwood Country Club in Cary. Go to edm4ustroops.com for more information. Birnbaum receives honorary doctorate. Biz offers a hearty congrats to Linda Birnbaum, director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences and the National Toxicology Program in RTP, on receiving an honorary doctorate from Ben-Gurion University of the Negev in Be'er Sheva, Israel. Each year, the university recognizes a select group of outstanding scholars, artists, and philanthropists. This year, Birnbaum joined seven other awardees in the ceremony. The other awardees included Nobel laureate and cancer researcher Linda Buck and Pulitzer Prize Israel Prize winning Holocaust historian Saul Friedlander. And for the tweets of the week, it was an honor and privilege to entertain everyone these past 16 years. Thanks for the memories. Go Canes. And that's from Ron Biscotti. Question I got, how many hours a week did you work at your first startup? Answer, all of them. Mark Cuban. City of Raleigh allocated $100,000 for startups in 2015 budget. Details to come. Thank you, hashtag Raleigh City Council, for your leadership. And that's from James Sauls. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal. First, we have Amanda Hoyle's page. She covers commercial and residential real estate. The main headline, Creekside at Crabtree Project okayed for Kids Hill. There's a green light for new construction, finally, for the demolished and long-dormant Kids Hill Plaza site behind Crabtree Valley Mall in Raleigh. Martin Fine Interests, a Texas apartment development firm, has paid $7 million for about half of the 12-acre property along Crabtree Valley Avenue that Weingarten Realty Investors of Houston has owned since 2007. Construction of a 335-unit apartment community called Creekside at Crabtree is slated to begin within the next 2 to 3 weeks, says Daniel Fine, vice president of Fine. Creekside at Crabtree should be ready to begin renting its first units in the first quarter of 2016. It will be Fine's first development project in the Triangle. The property, which connects to the mall via an existing bridge over Crabtree Creek and the city greenway, will have 301 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units that will average 870 square feet, plus another 34 units with attached garages that will have an average of 1,486 square feet. Fine did not disclose the projected rental rate for the luxury units, nor the cost of the total project once it is completed. West Chase Construction, an affiliate of Martin Fine Interests, will be the general contractor for the development. Architects are Steinberg Design Collaborative of Houston and Moore Design Group of Dallas, Texas. Eagle Realty Group is providing equity financing for the development, while BBVA Compass Bank is providing the construction financing. The developer had first submitted site plans for the project in 2012. Other apartment projects that are planned or under construction near Crabtree Valley Mall include the 384-unit Marshall Park on the Greenway on Blue Ridge Road, the 293-unit first phase of the Solis Crabtree, formerly Crabtree Village project on Homewood Banks Drive, and the 533-unit Crabtree North and Carolina Row at Crabtree projects on Lead Mine Road. DeWitt, Carolina, buys North River Golf Club. Todd Salid and Ven Poole, owners of Raleigh-based DeWitt, Carolinas, have finalized the purchase of the 275-acre North River Golf Club in Beaufort, with plans to restart development of its 1,500-unit housing community. North River Club's 18-hole golf course opened in 2007, and since 35 homes have been built, but development came to a standstill leading up to the 2008 recession. Salid says they have started building a 6,000-square-foot clubhouse and will be marketing homes starting in the $200,000. Wake Forest Crossing Retail Center sold. A 25-acre retail site surrounding the Kohl's department store in Wake Forest has been sold to Weingarten Realty Investors, with plans to restart leasing and development there. The Wake Forest Crossing 2 shopping center had been sold to distressed property specialist Gibraltar Capital in 2012, and Gibraltar sold the land to Weingarten for $5.6 million. The deal includes land enough to build about 109,000 square feet of retail space, plus 4 outparcels fronting Capitol Boulevard and Stadium Drive. Cisco to add 550 jobs in Triangle. California tech giant Cisco Systems is the second largest private employer in Research Triangle Park behind IBM, but Cisco has over the last few years focused more of its corporate growth prospects outside of the United States. Until the company on June 6 announced it is increasing its workforce in RTP by 12%. The new jobs in RTP will be a mix of finance, operations, and advanced network services positions. Here's the deal, broken down by the numbers. 550, number of new full-time jobs that Cisco has committed to create by the end of 2017. 4,500, current number of full-time Cisco employees in RTP. 1,500, contract workers currently working on behalf of Cisco at the RTP campus. $72,700, average wage per new job created, not including benefits. $49,410, average wage in Wake County. $12.9 million, value of the Job Development Investment Grant Award from North Carolina that would be paid out over 12 years if Cisco reaches its hiring goals. And finally, Cisco Systems RTP employment through the years. In 2009, it was at 4,500. And in 2013, it is at 5,500. And now we turn to the reporter page for Jason DeBrun. He covers healthcare and biopharmaceuticals. The first headline, local VA hospitals worst for wait times. Durham, Fayetteville facilities have longest waits in the U.S. for veteran appointments. Two Veterans Affairs hospitals in North Carolina stood out in an audit released on June 9 by the Veterans Affairs Department, but not for reasons they wanted. A higher percentage of patients at the Fayetteville Veterans Affairs Hospital waited more than 30 days for an appointment than at any other VA hospital in the nation. In Fayetteville, more than 8,000 patients could not be seen within a 30-day window, or 17% of total appointments scheduled. That's 6 percentage points higher than any other VA hospital, and more than 4 times the national average of 4%. In Durham, patients seeking mental health treatment for the first time in any 2-year period waited longer than at any other facility in the nation. These patients waited an average of 104 days, well above the average wait times at other VA hospitals in the nation. Findings were released in a national audit. Nationwide, there were more than 57,000 new patients who could not be seen for a medical care appointment within 3 months. Furthermore, there have been more than 63,000 patients in the past 10 years who have requested an appointment but have not been able to have one scheduled. For context, the audit found that 96% of the more than 6 million scheduled appointments were scheduled within 30 days of the reference date. The report determined that at VA hospitals, a 14-day wait time performance target for new appointments was not only inconsistently deployed throughout the healthcare system, but was not attainable given growing demand for services and lack of planning for resource requirements, and that a complicated scheduling process resulted in confusion among scheduling clerks and frontline supervisors in a number of locations. In its conclusion, the audit determined that such practices are widespread enough to require VA to re-examine its entire performance management system, and in particular, whether current measures and targets for access are realistic or sufficient. BCBSNC adds division, shuffles structure. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina shuffled around its organizational structure, consolidating various parts of its business under more defined groupings. The move comes as the state's largest insurer, with $5.5 billion in revenue and $177 million income, has expanded partnerships outside its core business of providing health insurance. As with many companies connected to healthcare, BCBSNC has looked to find business in new areas, like partnerships with FastMed Urgent Care, for example, or Carolina Advanced Health. As these new partnerships formed, they sprung out of disparate parts of Blue Cross, which employs 4,500 workers. A new division led by Maureen O'Connor, titled Health Solutions, will house these partnerships and be the division to look for new partners. In May, Blue Cross announced it would outsource some of its claim service to Accenture, affecting about 375 workers. Blue Cross will also streamline operations under a division led by Chief Operating Officer Alan Hughes. This will include the Healthcare Division and Network Management Department. In the new world of healthcare, we have to be able to adjust to changes and new realities on the spot and continue to explore ways to provide value to consumers beyond our core health insurance business, says BCBSNC CEO Brad Wilson. These changes support our goals, he says. Merck to buy biopharma company for $3.85 billion. Drug giant Merck will buy biopharmaceutical company Idenix Pharmaceuticals, Idenix spelled I-D-E-N-I-X, in a deal worth $3.85 billion. Based in White House Station, New Jersey, Merck & Company employs 1,400 workers in the Research Triangle Park area, mostly in a manufacturing facility in North Durham. The offering price means Merck will pay $24.50 in cash per share, or more than triple the Idenix closing price of $7.23 before the deal was announced. Company at risk of NASDAQ delisting. Raleigh Medical Device Company, Baxano Surgical, Baxano spelled B-A-X-A-N-O, was put on notice from NASDAQ that its share price had fallen too low for too many consecutive days. To maintain a listing on NASDAQ, companies must keep a share price of at least $1, and Raleigh's Baxano Surgical hasn't seen shares close above $1 since April 16. Baxano has 180 business days, or until December 1st, to regain compliance. To do so, the stock price must close at more than $1 for 10 consecutive trading days any time before December 1st. If it doesn't reach that level, NASDAQ will delist the shares. In March, Baxano reached a deal to raise $10 million from two institutional investors. And in April, it received positive news from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in that it received clearance to commercialize its Avance MIS pedicle screw system. Baxano develops minimally invasive products to treat degenerative conditions of the spine affecting the lumbar region. This segment has been the fastest growing area of the spine business for the past 5 years, according to Baxano CEO Ken Reale, who estimates that today it represents 30% of the total spine market and will surpass 50% of the total spine market within the next 4 to 5 years. To date, the company has not turned a profit, accumulating a deficit of $171 million. Last year, it recorded $19 million of revenue and a net loss of $32 million. And our one final section by the numbers, $30 million. Duke University Pratt School of Engineering received a $30 million commitment from alumni J. Michael Pearson and his wife, Christine, to advance engineering and science education across the university. Pearson is the CEO of Valiant Pharmaceuticals International. He received a total compensation of $7 million and $6 million in 2013 and 2012, respectively. In 2011, he received $36 million, though that came primarily in the form of stock awards and other compensation, according to securities filings. $105 million. GlaxoSmithKline agreed to pay $105 million in a settlement surrounding allegations that it improperly marketed drugs. Drug makers may publicly market drugs only for approved uses, and GSK was accused of marketing some of its drugs for other uses, often referred to as off-label use. GSK was accused of falsely marketing asthma drug Advair, which is made in Zebulon, for use by mild asthma sufferers, and the antidepressants Paxil and Wellbutrin for use by children and teenagers without approval from the FDA. And $1.5 billion. Analysts believe a hemophilia drug for which Biogen IDEC received approval last week could hit blockbuster status. Biopharmaceutical company Biogen IDEC received approval from the FDA to market Eloctate, spelled E-L-O-C-T-A-T-E, a treatment for hemophilia A, a drug that will be partly manufactured in the Research Triangle Park area. Analysts polled by Thomson Reuters expect the drug to hit annual sales of $1.5 billion by 2019, giving the company, with two triangle area operations, an addition to its strong portfolio in multiple sclerosis treatments. And now we turn to the reporter page for Lauren Onsorge. She covers technology and entrepreneurship. The first headline, Temple Run reaches billionth download. 1 billion. That's how many times Temple Run, the brainchild of Raleigh husband and wife entrepreneurs Keith Shepard and Natalia Lukyanova, has been downloaded, and it's only the second mobile game to ever reach the milestone. That's more than 32 billion games played and 216,018 years worth of collective playtime, if you're curious. The game is simple. Your character runs on a path, jumping and sliding away from obstacles, and that's it. The simplicity seems to be working, as Temple Run players have run 50 trillion meters on their mobile screens. But Shepard, who moved the parent organization, Imanji Studios, from Washington, D.C. to Raleigh, tells me Temple Run won't be the last title to come out of Imanji. When I last spoke to Shepard, he told me the success of the franchise was occupying all of his attention. While the company, which started in an apartment, used to release a couple of games a year, for the past two, it's been all Temple Run. We do kind of miss the other stuff we were doing before, he tells me this time. We decided to grow the team so we could get some of that back. Imanji is now at 11 employees in its Raleigh office, with four open jobs. That means Shepard and Lukyanova can let others on the team carry that franchise torch while they get back to innovating. The pair, who met while working at a healthcare software firm in D.C., are already in the idea phase. We're a month in on two really cool ideas, but they're definitely not far enough along that we are ready to start talking about them, Shepard says. He says returning to Raleigh, where years ago he attended Athens Drive High School, is paying off. The bulk of the new talent is coming from the Triangle. Shepard leaves me advice for would-be gamers. Network. Get active in the community, he says. After all, every developer needs an artist and vice versa. You just might find that person who can make your game, he adds. Yilio hopes for a big win at U.S. Open. For Tully Ryan, co-founder of Raleigh-based tech startup Yilio, Pinehurst is ground zero. The app, which intends to connect visitors to restaurants, hotels, cheap gas, and activities along their travel routes, found its training wheels during the Super Bowl, but they're about to come off in lieu of golf shoes. Thanks to a partnership with the Pinehurst Southern Pines Aberdeen Area Convention and Visitors Bureau, he hopes to be at the 100,000 download mark at the end of June. Building on the experience he had in New Jersey during the Super Bowl, he's updated his app, both in content and interface. Now, he says, 1.2 million businesses nationwide have been mapped out, some by signing up for the app, with others found from aggregator partnerships, such as one with the Golf Channel. The app works with both Google and Apple map programs and is free with a pay-per-click business model. According to SEC filings, Ryan raised $95,000 in loan financing in 2013 and has a $220,000 equity round that has yet to sell from March. As part of the partnership with the Visitors Bureau, he'll use the app to tout local businesses, and he's counting on them to return the favor. The U.S. Open continues into the week of June 16, when the championship was held at Pinehurst in 2005. The event attracted about 325,000 to the area. Caleb Miles, CEO of the CVB, anticipates more than 400,000 this time around. Most will use lodging outside of our local area, traveling to and from the championship over the 14-day period, he says. Using Yilio, spectators will be able to search ahead along their routes to find local restaurants, retail, gas, and even available golf tee times. Durham's Windsor Circle looks toward VC infusion. Matt Williamson, CEO of Durham email marketing firm Windsor Circle, has a secret, and it's in the form of term sheets. Williamson, on the stage at the 2014 State of Durham's Economy Breakfast, let it slip that a major venture capitalist had agreed to invest and that the upcoming investment round could finance a plan to more than triple Windsor Circle's workforce of 15. He told me he has several options on the table and could close on up to $5 million, depending how much equity he's willing to divvy out. We've got a lot to think about, he says. Local companies file conflict mineral reports. IBM, Cree, ABB, NetApp, and EMC joined more than 1,000 companies to meet the June 2nd deadline for reporting what are known as conflict minerals. These are materials such as tungsten and tin, whose mining in parts of West Africa has been linked to armed groups. The goal of the Securities and Exchange Commission probe was to figure out where minerals and everything from your favorite electronics to your vaccines are coming from, but the results? Inconclusive. Companies such as Cree don't directly deal with the mines and smelting operations, so was, according to filings, dependent on suppliers for due diligence. And Cree, along with most of the other companies, to complete the paperwork on time, therefore couldn't say for sure whether conflict minerals were a part of the operation. Companies did, for the most part, pledge to find ways to improve their due diligence next time around. Bot minions that create the antisocial social network. Imagine dozens of little bots that work for your every whim. A Raleigh entrepreneur at Red Storm Entertainment Roots envisions that future and is on his way to funding the effort, having just closed on a $1.6 million for his new venture. Called SZL, pronounced Sizzle, but spelled SZL, it's the brainchild of co-founder and CEO Richard Boyd, who also co-founded Red Storm Entertainment, the group behind the popular Tom Clancy video games that was acquired by Ubisoft. Sizzle is what I think of as the optimal solution to a really difficult problem on the internet today, which is, how do you filter all the content that's out there, he explains. Specifically, his team has developed Neural Net, an algorithm that learns your preferences. I like to think of it as a bunch of bots, he says, adding, for Despicable Me fans, that they are like minions. A whole bunch of software codes out there looking for things just for you, he says. It's a project he's been working on for more than 2 years, though the company just incorporated in October. I like to call ourselves the antisocial social network, he says. It's really not about your friends and your buddies. It's really about making technology work for you. This is just the latest company for Boyd, who is one of the founding employees at Virtus, a 3D game technology company in Cary back in the 1990s. That company spun out several game companies, including Red Storm Entertainment and Timeline Computer Entertainment with Michael Crichton. He followed that venture by founding 3DVillage.com, a company that focused on creating 3D walking tours. That company raised $2 million in venture capital and was acquired in 2001. Then came his most recent company, 3DZolve, which counted LinkedIn founder Reid Hoffman as an investor and sold to Lockheed Martin in 2007. Boyd spent the next 5 years running virtual world labs at Lockheed before leaving to work on Sizzle. He's nabbed some seed money from Triangle Startup Factory, but this is the first big round for the company. Boyd tells me he and his co-founder, Dave Smith, have had several big names, Hoffman among them, try to get him to move to Silicon Valley, but he's not budging. We think North Carolina has a lot going for it, he says. There is a detractor, though. We don't have money, necessarily, but we're finding that that is changing, he says. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter page for Dawn Curry. She covers small business, personalities, and Triangle trends. Her main article has the headline, Raleigh Gallery Fills Corporate Spaces with Southern Artwork. Her father said she'd never be able to make a living as an artist, and yet she is. Both an artist and a businesswoman, Nancy McClure is one of the owners of ArtSource Fine Art Gallery, the only art gallery in North Hills. She and Sharon Therrington own the gallery and have chosen art for some of the Triangle's corporate giants such as SAS. For 24 years, McClure says she has watched the budgets of local corporations allocated for art increase and decrease, but says, no matter how bad the economy is, someone is always willing to spend money on art. Before the abstract art seen here today, The Raleigh area wasn't too keen on breaking out of the box, and McClure and Therrington slowly introduced the edgier, more contemporary styles, including sweeping sculptures in lobbies, abstract paintings at tech firms, and the mobiles that hang and twirl under skylights across the triangle. "We made a footprint by selling the abstracts," McClure says. "Atlanta was doing it, and New York was doing it, but not really in Raleigh. Our gallery was one of the first to sell that kind of art." The gallery's early start in downtown Raleigh was in what McClure describes as a room the size of a dorm room. "We made ourselves look bigger than we were. We presented ourselves well, and we were very professional, and we started to get clients like Rex Hospital in Glaxo. It just happened. We had no idea it was going to grow." Back then, the gallery had next to no inventory and simply sourced art from other galleries. Now the gallery sources from 65 different artists, though artists available to them have fluctuated throughout the years. The gallery has 6 full-time employees. Essentially, they are art consultants. They match the business with the art and help artists sell their art in such a way that allows them to make a living. It's likely you'll see paintings priced upwards of $2,000 in the gallery. "I think artists don't know how to market themselves to businesses," says McClure. "I think they are really good at creating the art. Putting a price on it is something that makes them squeamish." She asks her business clients 2 things: what they do and what their budget is. Some will spend more money on lobby art and less throughout the building. Some simply want reprints, replicas, or even framed posters. Framing is another service the gallery offers. These art consultants can also point out where they think the art should go. A relocating company can supply the floor plan, and McClure and her business partner can recommend a new arrangement for the company's existing art. Japanese or Kenyan art cannot be found in the gallery, and McClure says she receives requests only for Southeastern art. The majority of the artists providing the art are from North Carolina or the Southeast. 5 summer scams to watch out for. The Better Business Bureau, serving Eastern North Carolina, has identified 5 scams for the Triangle to be aware of for this summer. The scams include fake travel agents, crooked moving companies, fake concert ticket vendors, door-to-door sales tricks, and shady summer jobs. Travel agents can be verified through the Better Business Bureau's, or BBB's, website, www.bbb.org, by a Google search of the phone number or website to look for reviews or reported problems. Summer is the peak of residence change, and unlicensed movers may give false price quotes online or over the phone, or may even send an estimator to homes in advance. According to the BBB, the lowest estimate can sometimes be an unrealistic lowball offer, which may cost you more in the end. Concert ticket vendors that have a sob story about why they can't use tickets, can only accept cash, or pressure you to act quickly are likely phony. The Better Business Bureau says most concert venues now allow ticket holders to print tickets. While some legitimate companies still go door-to-door with sales, scammers using this tactic may offer to pave driveways or repair air conditioning units. Do you have teens looking for a summer job? Watch out for job postings that tout no experience needed or require payment for training or a background check. Fly in, pig out at Pinehurst Restaurant. If you want a unique way to travel to the U.S. Women's Open, that comes with an exclusive dining option. The Pick and Pig is a local lunchtime favorite, located at 194 Gilliam McConnell Road on a private airfield in Carthage. And as for you pilots, the coordinates are north 3520-366, west 079-26204. And now we turn to the executive voice in this edition of the Triangle Business Journal. And the executive voice is Charles Trey Walters. The headline on this article is "Flight Club: Trey Walters Finds a Niche in Training Corporate Executives to Fly." And this article is written by Dawn Curry. You either want to fly an airplane or you don't. That's what Charles Trey Walters, president and founder of Blue Line Aviation, says of those who come to him for lessons. Blue Line Aviation is a flight school based at Raleigh-Durham International Airport, established in 2012. Walters, 26, says in his experience, people who want to learn to fly planes are typically either in their 20s or have waited until they had money and are in their 60s. Before founding the company, he was a Raleigh police officer, hence the Blue Line theme. Before being an officer, he served in the Air Force and became an Iraq War veteran by the time he was 18. In the company's early days, Walters, with guidance from his father, the first pilot he knew, took out a small business administration loan of $50,000 and used some of it to purchase a Cessna 172, which he says is traditionally used in flight instruction. 2 years later, the company has expanded its fleet to 6 planes and employs 10 people, office staff, instructors, and mechanics, and he's still hiring. The flight school now has about 60 students. Walter says one of the best services he offers is the executive training route, which allows traveling business people to fly their own planes wherever they need to go while receiving training from an instructor. That way they can learn to fly while conducting business, Walter says. It gives them flexibility and freedom and expands their reach. He sees a lot of people who want to buy jets and want to know if he can teach them to fly them. The program includes supplies, and the license can cost from $10,000 to $14,000 for a private license, to $60,000 to $70,000 for a commercial license. But the Triangle sees plenty of business clientele for which money is not an issue. There is one lady who has a jet here who will put fuel in it for $150,000, and I think to myself, you just put a house in your plane, says Walters, who has seen plenty of characters and well-known faces and names. One day, I ran into Mike Huckabee on the walkway, and it was funny because I had just seen him on TV a few hours before. We talked about politics and small business for a little. Bill Clinton came through. He's got a Blue Line Aviation t-shirt. The president and first lady come through here all the time. The biggest challenge for the growing company is space. Walter says he is exploring the possibility of additional square footage in unused buildings at RDU. And a closer look, a small box with detailed information. Name, Charles Trey Walters. Title, CEO, Pilot Flight Instructor. Company name, Blue Line Aviation. Age, 26. Education, Associate's Degree. First job, Air Force. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page in the Triangle Business Journal. And these are letters to the editor, guest column first, headlined, The Perils of North Carolina Gerrymandering. When I played sports as a child and later in college, everybody was expected to play by the same rules, and both sides had a fair chance to win. My children have had the same experiences, and over the years we talked a lot about being good sports and doing our best, but never about how we'd like to change rules so we could always win. After I grew up and got involved in elective politics, I felt that same way. I wanted a fair chance to win, not a stacked deck so I would have little chance of ever losing. I feel the same way now, even though I've lost my fair share of ball games and elections over the years. As I see it, however, fair play has suffered in politics, mostly through the redistricting process that has evolved over the years into what is now the fine art of gerrymandering. When my Republican Party was in the minority in our state legislature, the Democrats did it to us. And now that we're in the majority, we're doing it back to them. Under both circumstances, it did not and does not seem fair to me, nor good for our representative system of government. The problem is that we've so rigged our legislative districts that now there are very few real elections. Instead, most decisions about representatives are decided in primaries, in districts drawn to favor the party in power to the detriment of the party that's not. As a consequence, almost half of the members of our General Assembly were reelected on February 28 of this year, the filing deadline, because no one filed in gerrymandered Republican and Democratic districts in which heavily favored Republican or Democratic incumbents resided. Then on May 6 of this year, most of the remaining elections were also decided in primaries, in which fewer than 15% of the electorate made those decisions. As a result, when our legislators get to Raleigh or Washington, they will have little need to negotiate with the opposite side of the political aisle, by reason of their security in the highly partisan, gerrymandered districts that most of them represent. And so long as they satisfy whichever wing of their party that predominates their respective districts, they'll be safe for years to come. That may satisfy lots of people, and as a Republican who wants my party to control as much as possible, as long as possible, it's also appealing to me, as long as we're in the majority. But in my heart of hearts, I know it's not right and needs to be changed. We need to do what's best and fair for the majority of our citizens, not just me and my party. Accordingly, I support a nonpartisan redistricting process and a state constitutional amendment to make it binding for the long term. And this was written by Richard Vinroot, who is also a shareholder at Robinson, Bradshaw, and Hinson. And we also have another guest opinion, headlined, Debunking Bad Wage Arguments. And this is written by Andrew Broad, who is a senior research fellow in UNC Greensboro Center for Business and Economic Research. A bill to increase the federal minimum wage to $10.10 per hour died in Congress a few weeks ago, and it's unlikely that the current General Assembly will support an increase in North Carolina. But the public supports an increase, so it seems premature to declare the issue dead. Arguments against an increase continue to float around the media. Are any of them persuasive? Job losses. By far and away, the most frequent objection is that a raise to $10.10 would be a job killer. Based on a report by the Congressional Budget Office that summarized economic research on the minimum wage, that's a distinct possibility. That report estimated a loss of 500,000 jobs. However, the report also found a great deal of uncertainty about that estimate and placed it at the center of an interval from nearly zero up to about 1 million. So when business groups say that an increase to $10.10 would cause up to a million lost jobs, they're not wrong, but it's equally correct to say that it could cause no job losses whatsoever. In addition, the CBO report projected that the increase would lift 900,000 people out of poverty and give 16.5 million people a raise. Nearly all policies come at a cost, but the benefit-cost ratio of a minimum wage increase looks pretty good. That is why, as I noted in a previous column, the economics profession increasingly supports the minimum wage after decades of opposition. More job losses. Another argument is that an increase would lead to unemployment in other occupations as employers struggle to cover the higher cost of minimum wage workers. That might make some sense in the economist's dream world of perfect competition, in which employers have little or no ability to price their own products. But in the real world, the much more likely outcome is a combination of slightly higher prices for consumers and slightly lower profits for employers. Large employers would be especially likely to eat part of the increase, given that corporate profits are at an all-time high. Not a panacea. Others have argued against a minimum wage increase because it won't make a big dent in our poverty problem. By one estimate, 45 million Americans live in poverty, and the CBO report projects that raising the minimum wage to $10.10 will reduce that by fewer than a million. That's a clever argument, but it's the wrong standard. The correct criterion isn't whether a policy solves the entire problem, but whether the benefits exceed the costs. The CBO report implies that a raise to $10.10 meets that test. Poorly targeted. Some have claimed that minimum wage workers don't deserve higher wages because they tend to be secondary earners, for example, teenagers and middle-class families. However, research by the Economic Policy Institute shows that most workers affected by an increase to $10.10, either directly or indirectly, are in families with incomes below the median, and that on average, such workers account for half of their family's incomes. Not the right time. Some say we shouldn't increase the minimum wage in a depressed economy, but that's a dubious concern. A higher minimum wage would effectively redistribute income to low-wage workers, who spend nearly everything they receive. The stimulus would be small. The EPI study projects increased economic growth of about a tenth of a percent over the next 2 years, but an increase wouldn't hurt the economy. All in all, it's hard to find a good argument against raising the minimum wage. And finally, with our last minutes, we'll read the spotlight in the People on the Move section. It's of Tracy Hood, Executive Director of Read and Feed. As a former public school teacher, Tracy Hood says she was drawn to the mission of giving disadvantaged elementary school children an appetite for reading. And in her new post as Executive Director of Read and Feed, she has the opportunity to do just that. Raleigh native and former Executive Director of the Miracle League of the Triangle, Hood now serves as the primary advocate, fundraiser, spokesperson, and administrator of Read and Feed. She's also charged with program and operational oversight and ensuring a positive cash flow for the nonprofit. Read and Feed has an annual budget of about $350,000, Hood says. What's one thing you wish people knew about your job? It's important for people to know that being the executive director of a small nonprofit is not glamorous. Organizations like ours lack deep staffing, and as a result, there are no departments to handle day-to-day operational matters. It can be a challenge to wear so many different hats, but the reward is working to fulfill the organization's mission. What are some of your major goals in this position? Despite all the good work we're doing here in Wake County and the growth of our program, Read and Feed still has relatively low recognition. Building greater community awareness is clearly a major goal. And we're going to stop there. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.